prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and once again, you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion, commentary on today's economic and political events on Friday, November 15th, 2013. Happy Friday to you all, and what a week it's been. It's been an unusual week, a hectic week here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. We'll be making an announcement about Silver Eagles after the break, after the first break, so make sure you stay tuned. It's the end of the year, and things are beginning to hop, and of course, with the end of the year Silver Eagles, the changeover from 13s to 14s, we'll give you an update on that. But first, let's get to the markets. Gold tried, 1289, still up on the day by a few pennies, almost a dollar, $1,289, up a buck. You have silver up a penny at 20.86. Platinum was down $7 today at 1445. And we also have palladium down $6 at $736. USDX today trading a little bit lower, 0.15 at 80.84. And crude oil still hovering 93.75 for crude oil. And I guess the paper markets did some more cheering today. Another record high after the sixth straight week of gains. And, of course, all that anybody cares is about what Janet Yellen and what Ben Bernanke wears. That's what's important. The Dow was up 86 points today at 15,962. The Nasdaq up 13 at 39.85. The S&P up 7 at 1798. 10-year yield still trading at 2.71. And, of course, you're going to see these kind of numbers, you know, going on until Thanksgiving anyway. They got to do whatever they can to pull a rabbit out of their hat. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, Dow's approaching 16,000. It's like, who cares? But I'll tell you what, the people who should care out are those who are showing great quarterly results on their investments, and they should be taking some of their profits out. There's nothing wrong with taking profits. Stocks today are meant to trade because things can happen so very, very quickly. So think about it, folks. Take a review of your portfolio. If you have any questions, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. It's kind of an interesting day. It's interesting that nothing dramatic is going on exactly.
at least not in the markets. It's just kind of happening along the rest. But we've seen a number of reports, people warning that interest rates are going to rise. And if they do, the market is going to go down. And, you know, we've talked a little about this in the past. We've talked a lot about it, really. I guess the idea that the fundamental strategy for gaining wealth in this world is to buy low and sell high. The stock markets are at highs. It's a virtual certainty. We don't know how high they're going to go. They could go considerably higher, but odds are we're going to see an adjustment, a correction in the near future. And the fundamental idea is you buy low and you sell high. If you own stock and the stock market is high and perhaps at a record high, it's time to start thinking about maybe now it's time to unload. Because there will be, just as sure as night follows day, we're going to see a correction. Don't know how great, don't know how long it'll last, but we're going to see one. And good reason why we're going to see one. What's holding the markets up right now? The only thing that's holding them up is the promise that the Federal Reserve will continue to inject $85 billion a month into the economy, and ultimately that's supporting the stock market. What that tells us, people look around and say, oh, the economy's doing better. How much better can the economy be doing if it needs an $85 billion per month fix to keep running? The fact that they keep pumping that $85 billion into the economy is absolute evidence that the economy is too weak to stand on its own. It's not evidence of strength. It's like giving amphetamine to a man who's dying. He may get up and dance for a little while, but I guarantee you it doesn't change his prognosis. And insofar as the only way you can get him to dance is by giving him an injection of amphetamine, that's pretty good evidence, even for those of us who are not licensed to practice medicine, that this particular individual is in big trouble. Now, I'm not suggesting the economy is going to die or whatever. That's not my point, but I'm just using it as an analogy. And as long as the government continues to inject $85 billion a month, and they feel compelled to inject $85 billion a month into the economy, it is absolute evidence that the economy is not doing well. And the only reason stocks are up is because they're getting that fix, that $85 billion a month fix. Without that, the stocks would fall, and probably dramatically. You look at that, and that's, to me, this is just evidence of fundamentals. Insofar as people are persuaded that the stock market is doing great right now, we're hitting record highs, well, yes, we are. But again, it's like watching that old guy who's pumped full of amphetamine get up out of his bed and dance. the next sound you hear may be the cry of the mortician saying, somebody get that old timer and get him over here because we got to plant him. Point behind all of it, it's an illusory high right now. And again, you buy low, you sell high. Now it might not be a bad time to sell when stocks are at record highs, and now might not also be a bad time to buy gold because the price is irrationally low. All right? Good idea. All right? You buy low, you sell high. If you have to sell high in order to buy something else that's low, that's the way you do it. That's if you can go from one investment vehicle to the next, and you go from one that's at its peak, and then you invest in one that's at its bottom, and when it gets to its peak, then you sell out and you invest in the next one that's down at the bottom. If you can do that, you can run a strategy that might make you wealthy.
There's one area of the country that seems to be doing well. North Dakota is on pace to outdo oil production record. Their ore drillers, they're on pace to outdo last year's record crude production. And they are nearing a milestone of 1 million barrels of oil a day. That came from the State Industrial Commission about their Crude production in September totaled a record of 931,000 barrels, almost 932. So nearly 28 million barrels for the month. So even when they're successful like that, it still brings problems to the communities. But it's nice to see that, you know.
Yeah, it's always the way it's.
Mm-hmm.
And where are you going to go where there are no problems? Anybody know where that is?
There's no such place. Port Matilda.
You wait. Your turn is coming.
Well, I'll tell you what. The UK came out today. The British government had issued a stark warning about a cyber scam that locks users out of their computers unless they pay a ransom, saying that tens of millions of people may soon be targeted. In a message headlined, Urgent Alert, Britain's National Crime Agency said Friday that they were aware of a mass email spamming event that is ongoing and urged computer users to be aware of messages that are supposedly coming from their banks. The scam works by tricking users into downloading CryptoLocker, a piece of malicious software that encrypts a user's hard drive, effectively scrambling all their personal documents and photos. A countdown clock appears on the screen, warning that the files will be lost unless the ransom is paid, typically through hard-to-trace cyber currencies such as Bitcoin. So there you go. There's all your uses for Bitcoin, so you can pay your ransom so you can get into your computer. But all kinds of – that's probably the NSA.
Yeah, I understand. Who's really behind this?
Behind
it may even be Obama trying to drum up some more money to fund his replacing the existing website. That might be what's happening here.
There was another article that I found interesting today because we talked about this, I don't know, last week or the week before, Al, about the U.S. banks that are restructuring plans in case they flunk a key review of their finances, in case there's some sort of a bank situation that the banks have enough money on hand. And we saw that happening here in the States a couple of weeks ago. The announcement was made. Well, today the European Union finance ministers came out today and made the same statements. Making sure that the region's banks have restructuring plans ready in case they flunk a key review of their finances. The ECB is leading a year-long review of the EU's largest banks to find and then either fix or weed out weak banks. And that is exactly what they are doing over here. So it's I found that very interesting. The question is what to do in case the reviews find a bank needs to raise more capital. And the article that we read about the U.S. banks had said that, you know, they are finding ways in which they'd be able to make loans and so forth if they had any problems. So I found that interesting.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you can look at that kind of information and wonder, is this just a standard exercise to prepare for possibilities that might have happened a year ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago, or is this evidence that they are increasingly concerned that the probability of a problem is rising, and therefore they're going to do what they can to kind of get ready for it because they think it's really going to happen. It's not just a bizarre idea.
What I do know is banks, and we saw it happen. Prior to 2008, we saw them rewrite the bankruptcy laws because they knew how many bankruptcies were coming down the pike. And that's what they do. They get ready. They set up. They position themselves so they get hurt the least. And they'll do whatever they can to throw the amount of weight onto the taxpayer. We've seen them already, how U.S. banks are no longer, the FDIC is no longer insuring U.S. banks' foreign accounts. We've seen how they lowered the corporation bank limits as of January this year. So there's just too much going on in concerns about the banking situation not to think that something deep is coming.
Well, this whole thing, you know, you just look at it and you can see that it's unstable, that's for sure. And when you make the point about changing laws, banks moving to change laws in anticipation, for example, in 2008, they're changing laws on bankruptcy in anticipation of a great number of bankruptcies. They can see it coming. They say, okay, let's change the law before it gets here, and then we won't lose money or we won't lose as much. They're trying to protect themselves by changing law. What's the lesson in this? The lesson is that these bankers take a long-term view. They are prepared to sit back and look at a horizon that's several years away. And they say, we need to act now to prepare for what's going to happen 3 years, 5 years, 20 years from now. And they will tend to do that. They're not worried about what's going to happen next week or next Wednesday or, you know, the 23rd of next month. That's not their problem. They're not concerned about that. They're sitting back and say, what's going to happen in a couple of years? And by means of taking that long-term view, they can maximize their wealth and their profits. And it would be a good idea for most people to do the same thing. Don't worry about what happened to the market today. It's interesting information, and it's helpful, and it's useful in some regards, but it shouldn't be controlling. You've got to be looking at the indicia that tell us what's going to happen a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now. And what is that? What tells us? And the answer is fundamentals. You look at the fundamentals, and they tell you. They won't tell you what's going to happen today, tomorrow, or a week from now. But those fundamentals are powerful trends, inclinations that appear likely to, you know, to continue in a certain direction over a considerable period of time. You look at the fundamentals, and that's the way you bet as much as possible. There are going to be instances where you're going to see buying opportunities. All of a sudden, the market, despite fundamentals, you'll see a sudden drop in the market. Creates a buying opportunity. Despite fundamentals, you'll see the market suddenly peak. Right? Maybe creates a selling opportunity. But look at the fundamentals. Look at that long-term trend. Thanks to it, you ought to do the same.
And how long have we been talking about pension funds? And how, you know, you really believe that they're set in stone, that they can't change them, that they can't change legislation so they can change them? Absolutely. Today, an article came out with CNN Money about hundreds of thousands of retired union workers are facing pension cuts that mm-hmm. could slash their monthly payments in half or even more. So, hey, if you're on a fixed income of $3,300 a month and all of a sudden it goes down to $1,200, that's a big drop. But these cuts are part of a desperate effort to head off insolvency at multi-employer pension plans, pensions that typically provide the benefits for the workers at very several companies. It's an unconventional move. Pension law has long maintained that cutting the benefits of those already retired is off limits. Current law allows troubled multi-employer plans to reduce the benefits that employees earn going forward, cut early retirement and disability benefits, and hike employer contributions instead. And things have gotten so dire that a coalition of employers and labor unions is asking Congress to change the law. You're talking about 10 million workers and retirees in the trucking business, construction, retail, mining, manufacturing, and other industries. So, and historically, these plans were considered secure.
Yeah, but, well, it was a nice theory, but...
Nice theory.
We've been telling people for 5 years now anyway, what can't be paid won't be paid.
That's right.
And the point being, the debt is too great. The total debt, not just the national debt. I mean, that's beyond any capacity for government to repay. But including the private debt that people owe and the rest, we are individually in debt for $250,000 each, maybe more. There's no way that's going to be paid. The average man doesn't have a quarter million dollars for him and a quarter for $1 million for his wife and for each of his two kids. That's what this averages out to right now if the debt is as great as some people suspect. There's not going to be paid. And that means inevitably, if the debt can't be paid, those of you that are sitting there holding these debt instruments are going to be, on average, you're going to suffer a great loss of assets. That's the implication. It has to be that way. And the only thing we don't know is when that loss is going to be encountered. But it's going to happen. We're going to get to it. Anyone can look at it. You'll see the math and you say, ooh, darn. Got a problem here. We have another problem, Melody.
We do?
Yes. Got to take a break.
Okay.
for some commercial announcements.
That's not
I'm
a
Alfred
problem.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, I'm going to give the listeners a scoop on the Silver Eagles. The past couple of weeks, the U.S. Mint has been shy or sly of handing out and selling their Silver Eagles. They rejected an order of 600,000 planchets from the manufacturer because they said it wasn't up to code, so they rejected, and they're releasing on a limited basis 1 ounce Silver Eagles. We saw the premium increase because of that. We also only have 3 more releases of Silver Eagles before they begin to change over to 2014s. So I believe we could pretty much see a delay in Silver Eagles. The 2014s are only scheduled to be released January 14th. They might do it sooner. They usually do. And usually there's enough 2013s to get us through till we get to January 14th. But you'll see massive delays. You know, you'll be up to 4 to 5 weeks delays. So we'll keep you posted on delays, but we did see premiums go up about 50 cents. just recently this week, and you can also see those premiums increase a little bit more if product gets tight. So if you're looking to buy Silver Eagles, now's the time to do it before the premiums get higher and deliveries get slower. I haven't heard anything about shortages of silver or anything like that. It's just we go through this every single year. Depending on the volume, we could even see it in the Gold Eagle area. But no changes there for the gold side of the product. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you check out our website, dgscoins.com, and, of course, sign up for our weekly newsletter, American Survival.
Speaking of premiums, you're talking about premiums on rising on the price of Silver Eagles. Here's premiums in India on gold. And this is from Ms. Shedlock's newsletter. And it says, he writes in part, with India's 10% gold import duty, on top of other capital controls, the price one has to pay for gold in India has reached a record spread of 21.6% versus what one has to pay in countries where there are no such controls or import duties. Now, this is a record premium. In other words, you have to, if you buy say you're going to buy $10,000 worth of gold in India, you're going to wind up paying an extra 22% on top of that. You're going to buy pay $12,200 for $10,000 worth of physical gold. And I look at this and I wonder if this is not the beginning of a recognition of what the market for physical gold is. I don't think you can say that's the case, but I just have a feeling, a suspicion that the extra 22% they're paying in India is the beginning of a physical market, not a paper market, which is all that we have. When we report the price right now from COMEX or wherever, we're just reporting the price of paper gold. We're not there isn't an established market for physical gold in the world right now, not one that's significant. And therefore, we don't really know the price of physical gold. We only know the price of paper gold. And paper gold is intrinsically worthless. There's not enough gold to pay for all the paper. I've heard some people say that there's only about 1 ounce of physical gold in the markets to back up 100 ounces of paper gold. I don't know that the ratio is 100-1, but it's still substantial. It's not 2-1 or 3-1. It's a lot. To 1 ounce of gold, you got a lot of paper out there. And again, this is another one of those what can't be paid won't be paid instances. If time ever comes where everyone who's trading in paper gold says, I'd like to take physical delivery, the whole system collapses. And the price of physical gold goes up through the roof. There is more paper debt relative to gold than there is actual gold to make good on that alleged debt. And it's just another one of those things. You sit there and you look at it and you say, there's no way to look at this that I can understand where you can sit back and say that the price of gold, the fundamentals aren't pushing gold higher. Doesn't mean gold can't go below what the price is today. That's not my point. But for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, if you're making investments and you're not just poking around seeing if you can make a 0.5% today, buy this morning, sell this afternoon, make 0.5%, 2%, whatever. If you're speculating, then fundamentals don't matter. But if you're investing, they do. India's paying 22%. On top of the price of bullion. I think it's beginning to reflect the price of physical gold rather than the price of paper gold. We'll watch and see, and maybe that'll turn out to be true, and maybe not. We'll see. What do you think, Melody?
Well, I certainly think. We're certainly in strange trading arenas in today's world. So, you know, we talk about the fundamentals all the time, and that is something we need to focus on. And you can bring in all sorts of, and these are signs. This is what's happening. And we could very well see some big percentage increases for gold and silver when things get fairly dire here in this country. When one country does one thing, I believe it sets a criteria for others to follow. So absolutely,
it depends on the country, of course. I mean, some countries have no influence, and some do.
Well, you know, it's something to look at, and you know, we could very well see it happen in other places. So,
well, it's Asia. We're talking Asia right now. All right, we're not just talking India. We're talking Asia.
I understand.
Which has become the gold sink of the world. That's between
right.
India and China, they're taking all the gold they can lay their hands on, and it seems inevitable that they don't want to keep. When the supply folds up and they're no longer able to buy physical gold at paper gold prices,
mm-hmm.
when people stop saying, oh, I'll sell my gold for $1,300 to China, when that stops, then China's going to sit back, in my opinion, they'll sit back and say, okay, it's time to start a physical market.
Mm-hmm.
And now we'll see what the price of gold really is. If we can't buy any more physical gold at paper gold prices, which is essentially a fire sale, if we can't buy any more, all right, now we're going to have that physical market, and now we're going to take the price of our gold that we bought at paper gold prices, and we're going to see what physical gold is really worth, and they'll try to jack it up just as high as it can go, just out of self-interest. So in any case, we'll watch and see. It's, you know, Asia, strange things happening. And maybe not so strange. Maybe it's just not what we might see in this country. But it's still one country just doing the best it can for itself. That's all. Follow the money trail. How do you make the most money? You know, a lot of economics really is pretty simple. Then it gets overly complicated with a bunch of formula and indicators and, you know, balancing and whatever, and it becomes so complex you can't hardly understand it at times, but it may not be that really all that complicated. I've talked about it before. I believe it's chapter 42 of the Bible, where it explains how Joseph, how Joseph really was the first world's economist, and he put the people of Egypt into bondage. The people of Egypt went into bondage because Joseph understood there was going to be 7 years, 7 good years followed by 7 bad years. There'd be 7 years of bumper crops followed by 7 years of famine. And if you read, I believe it's chapter 42, and you read it closely, we've been told that Joseph, he saved the people of Egypt because during the 7 years of bumper crops, he saved up grain, and he put it in grain silos and whatever, so they'd have enough grain to get them through the 7 years, and he's presented as a hero. But if you read chapter 42, you'll see it wasn't anything heroic at all. The people got into a bind in the famine years. He didn't give them grain. He sold them grain. He cornered the market on grain, and he took all of their money. And then it says in the Bible, it said, and the money, and he put it in the Pharaoh's storehouse. And he says, and the money failed. And what they mean by that is there was no more money in circulation. And no one understood why. But the money was gone. And the second year, the people come back and say, why should we die? Why should we starve to death? And he said, I will give you grain, but you got to give me all your cattle. And the people said, fine, we'll give you all the cattle. In return for the grain that Joseph had controlled. In the third year, they came back and they said, we're starving. Why should we die? And he said, I will give you grain if you agree that you will become the slaves of the Pharaoh. And the people said, yeah, let's do it. And the point I'm trying to illustrate is that I will bet you that if you really mastered just chapter 42 of Genesis in the Bible, you'd know as much as 80% of the economists in this country. They knew how to take over a whole country 3,000 years ago by use of economic principles. And it's right there in the Bible if you care to read it. This isn't news. You understand this has been going on for centuries. And it's not incomprehensible. It's just, it takes a little effort to understand. And it takes a special kind of insight to see what's happening. I look at that chapter 42, and especially the part where they said the money failed. What happened? Joseph traded grain in the first year to the people of Egypt in return for their money. And he got all of their money, and he took it out of circulation and parked it in the Pharaoh's storehouse. If the people still had real money, they might have been able to work their way through the famine. But without real money, they were caught in a bigger bind. Right? It made things worse. It aggravated the problem. It pushed them deeper into dependency and starvation and so on. And the point for that rings my bell. They've also taken the money out of circulation in this country. You read the Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 says no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Took the gold out in 1933. Took the silver out. It was gone by the end of 1968. No more silver in domestic circulation. That's very similar to what we see in the story of Joseph. Although in Joseph's story, everything, they became slaves within a matter of 3-4 years. In our story, they took the money, they took the gold out in 1933, they took the silver out in 1968. We are now something like 45 years. We haven't had any money. In that regard, we are vulnerable in the same way that the people of Egypt were vulnerable. And they became slaves in part because they didn't have any money. It's part of the reason why we encourage people to try to understand the difference between currency, which is just these fiat pieces of paper that have no intrinsic value, and money, which is gold and silver, and has been for thousands of years.
And will be.
Yes, and will be. And those of you who have gold and silver, in the event that push comes to shove, and we see another circumstance much like what they experienced in Egypt, those of you who have gold and silver, and it hasn't all disappeared into the Pharaoh's storehouse or disappeared into the Federal Reserve storehouse or disappeared into the federal government storehouse. Those of you who still have some gold and silver, you're going to be in better shape than all the rest of the people that are sitting around with these pieces of paper that no one is going to want. So, you know, it's just another one of those stories. Another one of the fundamentals. You look at it and say, wait, this makes sense. There's a way of looking at it that makes sense. It's contrary, perhaps, to what we see on a moment-to-moment basis right at this moment, but fundamentals are still there. Fundamentals deal with long-term prospects. And so you look at the fundamentals and say, ha-ha, I think this is a good choice. Do you ever say, ha-ha, Melody?
Yes, I do.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I say absolutely.
Well, it is. You know, it's a silly thing. We keep our harping on it and the rest of that sort of thing, but try to communicate to people that this is an important understanding, an important level of understanding, and at least something for you to consider. You know, you can't believe everybody you
and
hear.
You know
the rest
what,
of it. I get that, but you can consider and use your own ears and eyes.
It becomes so confusing for folks, you know, because they hear so many things. They end up buying gold and silver with the promises that, you know, tomorrow it's going to go up. They buy into the shortages and everything else, and they're led away from the true fundamentals. And that's why they have such a difficult time in staying with it. For newbies that come into gold and silver, you know, if it doesn't do well in a year or two, they're ready to get out because now they see the stock market at 16,000 and they would have been better off if. And so now they sell their gold, they go into the paper market, and guess what? In a little bit of time, the stock market's going to go down and gold's going to go up. You buy gold and silver, you use it as the insurance policy for your wealth, for difficult times, for times of uncertainty, and things have never been more uncertain than they are today. and the fundamentals for gold and silver, the truth about gold and silver. That's what we try to bring with this program, is the truth about it, without sensationalism, without, we don't need to mislead and make strange predictions and so forth in order for people to understand. It gets people's attention. Maybe we should do it a little bit more. Maybe we should sit here, Al, and promise gold is going to go to 50,000 by 2016. You think that'd get people's attention?
I don't think it could make it. I don't believe it could get there before 2017 myself.
Oh, okay.
But who can say? I tell you what we can say is it's time for us to take another break, so let's do that,
that
and get some more.
That got your attention.
Yeah, it gets my attention. It makes me laugh a little bit. We'll be back in just a minute, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
We're going to talk about the 40 House Democrats that defied Obama and helped the Republican majority pass a bill today that lets Americans keep for 1 year health plans that do not comply with Obamacare. Although Obama already said he's going to veto it, so that's probably, you know, it's like, what's the point? It's all about elections next year, folks. That's what it's all about. But
it's also interesting that the House is responding, and they're passing a bill. The bill has to get past the Senate before it might become a legitimate law. But nevertheless, we've got 40 Democrats. They've defied President Obama. That defied is the word used in the Washington Times. And they helped the Republican majority pass the bill on Friday, today. Lets Americans keep for 1 year health plans that don't comply with Obamacare. It highlighted the pressure on Congress to help people who lost coverage. One of the representative, Ron Barber, Arizona Democrat, said, let's face it, millions of people right now have a canceled policy. And he voted for the Keep Your Health Plan Act. All right. despite a veto threat from President Obama. It was passed at the House level. And this is interesting to me because Obama says yesterday, comes out and he says, I know this is a problem. We're sorry about all that. I feel your pain. And therefore, we're going to let you keep your health care policies if that's what you want to do. It'll be up to, he's not going to pass a law on it, you understand. He's just going to leave it up now. It's up to the insurance companies whether they want to allow you to keep or abandon the existing health care. And here we have a law on Friday that's being proposed, and Obama threatens to veto it. Well, what it tells you, it just confirms what we talked about yesterday, that President Obama doesn't want you to get out from under the Affordable Health Care Act. He doesn't want you. He had to go through certain motions and say, well, we'll let the insurers do the right thing if they care to. Right. He's pretty sure they probably won't. And so he doesn't want them to. He doesn't. As I said the last couple of days, I don't believe Obamacare can withstand competition from private insurance policies. Once Obamacare goes into effect, everybody's got to get on it. If there are some people that are still having insurance policies that are provided in the private sector without regard to Obamacare, the contrast will become obvious to all. I think everyone's going to see, my God, it's a better deal in the private sector than it is under Obamacare, and everybody's going to want to go to the private sector. He can't stand that competition, and therefore the private sector, the opportunity to buy your own policy has to be terminated as quickly as possible. At least that's the way I'm reading it. And, of course, we've got another article here. What is this? Unwilling and unable, Washington State rejects Obama's proposal to extend canceled policies. 2 hours after Obama said it's okay for you to keep your policy if the insurance companies agree, 2 hours later, Washington State rejected Obama's proposal. Seattle Times reports...
That's what I said. These states, they can't change it that quick. So you're going to have
well,
to
that's what they're
reject
that's
it.
What they're bringing out in this article. The state insurance commissioner Mike Creedler rejected Obama's proposal to allow insurance companies to extend health care policies for people who have received notices that the policies have been canceled. He said, and this within two hours of Obama's said, oh, they can keep them if they want them. Krieger goes on. And he says. Creedler. He says, I understand that many people are upset by the notices they've recently received from their health plans, and they may not need the new benefits in the Affordable Health Care and the Affordable Care Act today. But I have serious concerns about how President Obama's proposal, and that is his proposal to allow people to keep their insurance policies. He says, I have serious concerns about how President Obama's proposal would be implemented, and more significantly, its potential impact on the overall stability of our health insurance market. I have no idea myself how does this affect the overall stability of our health insurance market. But he is making a point. It's not going to be easy. All right? The law is not a matter of simply waving a magic wand and turning a pumpkin into a carriage. It actually takes time. You run the magic wand, and then people have to get to work, and they actually have to build the carriage. It doesn't just presto change the pumpkin into the carriage. You actually got to build the carriage. It takes time. And what he's saying, look, we've been preparing for this. We've made the change. It's not something we can back out of. So, what's it all point to? It points to Obamacare is a long way from being resolved. It's a long way from finding out what the final form of Obamacare, the final extent of Obamacare is going to be. And I expect this debate and this issue, I think it's going to drag on until the 2014 election. I fully expect to see this lingering for most of the next year.
Well, I think while it is, it's a tactic to delay. They know people's attention span is that of, you know, very short-lived. People adjust. They quit griping. They know they're running out of time. They'll go sign up. They'll go get a new policy, and they'll move on to the next crisis. And to me, this is all about getting everybody on it. It's the one-payer system. They couldn't force the national ID card, so this is in place of, and because, you know, give them something in order to accept something. And this is it, and this is much, much bigger than just the health care for people, and much bigger design. It's here, and I think this is just, there's nothing they can do in a short period of time in order to change everything. These insurance companies have been working on these changes for how many years? They can't change it in a day or two or with some legislation. So
I think apparently it's working out that way. And even if Congress passes laws, it's going to be interesting to see if they can force the insurance companies to reinstate policies.
Not if Obama vetoes it.
Well, even if he doesn't veto it, let the law be passed, and still how fast can it be implemented? Right? Everybody's going to be screaming and saying, no, I don't want the policy that you think I'm going to have. I want the one I used to have. There are other people calling up and say, well, my brother-in-law's got a policy like this one, and I want one like his. They're going to say, you can't have it because you weren't already signed up for it. And he's going to be screaming into the phone, say, wait a second, that's not fair. I mean, the whole thing will turn into a gigantic circus. And where is it going to end? No, I don't see an easy end on any of this. Here's one
from
Obama.
There is no easy end. They're going to get.
I mean,
it's just going to get implemented.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I'm not even sure about that. What I'm getting to is we could see a period of 6 months or a year when a lot of people just don't have health insurance.
Oh, I agree. Because there's going to be lapses from people who've been canceled, haven't been able to go out and get it.
They've been canceled and they can't get new because Obamacare doesn't work and their old policies are canceled. Now where are they? They're off in limbo someplace.
Well, they can go into local insurance offices and sign up for coverage and so forth. However, the other issue is what they're going to be paying. It's going higher, folks.
Yeah, I know. Not a little bit
And when
either.
People are on a limited income, you know, unless you get into Medicaid, we know over 300,000 people have gotten into Medicaid. We know over 300,000 gotten approved for a subsidy in this health care. He's proud of those. Obama's out there. Well, everybody's talking about the people who can't sign up, but let's talk about the people who did sign up. 300,000 for Medicaid. These are all people where it's going to affect taxes, localities, cities, states. I mean, nobody cares. It'll just get done.
Well, everybody cares, but no one comprehends. No one even knows what's going on here, and that includes Obama.
Well, they know what's going on.
No, I don't think they do. I think, at least in terms of the website, it's so messed up.
He can go on there and say, I'm sorry, but...
I've got one here from the Washington Times, and the headline is, Obama. I don't think I'm stupid enough to mislead on website. Obama doesn't think he's stupid enough to have done what he did intentionally. And I think maybe he's mistaken about that. In the days leading up to the October 1st launch of the healthcare.gov, President Obama says he didn't know just how faulty the site would be. He told reporters a Thursday that had he known of the rampant glitches and crashes that have plagued Obamacare's central hub, he wouldn't have promoted it so heavily. I find the word so heavily, the term so heavily, interesting. It implies that he would have promoted it, but not as heavily as he has up until now. Clearly, we and I did not have enough awareness about the problem with the website, and we can all ask why not. He goes on, he says, I was not informed directly that the website would not be working the way it was supposed to. I'm accused of a lot of things. I don't think I'm stupid enough to go around saying that this is going to be like shopping on Amazon or Travelocity a week before the website opens if I thought it wasn't going to work. Well, that's probably true, but how can we be sure? I mean, President Obama was stupid enough to let the contract for building the website go on a non-compete bid that was awarded to one of his wife's college girlfriends. All right? There was no competition on this. It was just handed over as a gift to one of Michelle's college friends. Mm-hmm. Obama was stupid enough to let that happen. Obama was stupid enough to let the contract go for $93 million. And some people today claim that the job was fairly simple and could have been done in a few months for $10 million. $10 million. Obama paid $93 up front, and Obama was stupid enough to let his wife's college girlfriend charge another $600 million in cost overruns while building the website. But now he denies that he's stupid enough to go around saying this is going to be like shopping on Amazon or Travelocity a week before the website opens if I thought this wasn't going to work. Well, maybe he's not stupid enough to say that, but I'm not convinced. The truth is, the Obamacare website has been mishandled by President Obama from day one. President Obama was stupid enough to mishandle the website. Now President Obama is quite properly being held liable for his own stupidity. And it began with allowing that job to be handed over to a friend of the family on a no-compete bid. The people right now say the whole thing, it's a $10 million project. Not $700 million, $10 million. Well, Obama's got a lot of splaining to do. I don't know that we'll ever get that splaining, but he may not be as smart as he thinks he is. That's probably true for all of us. I doubt if any of us are as smart as we think we are, but Obama's certainly he's the poster boy for this month. He's the poster boy for folks who are not as smart as they think they are.
You think?
That's what I think.
All right. Well, we have only a few minutes left of the program, Al.
Actually, a minute and 26 seconds. No, 23 seconds. No.
All right. All right. Anyway, folks, it's Friday. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Get your orders in for Silver Eagles. They're going to be going fast. And your Gold Eagles, get prepared for what is, I believe, some interesting. I think 2015 is going to be an interesting year.
I'm not even worried about 2015. I'm thinking about 2014.
I mean 2014. Oh, it's Friday, folks. It's been one heck of a week. And Al, you finished the program. I'm going to listen, and folks, have a good weekend, and I will be back on Monday.
Just dump it on me. I feel like Huckleberry Finn every time this happens. All right? Come on over here, Huckleberry. We're going to let you whitewash the fence for the next 30 seconds. Try to think of something intelligent to say, will you?
Make it pretty.
Boy, I'll tell you, I don't know.
Tell the listeners what we didn't get to a lot of the European numbers. Things are, it's pretty much the same over there, telling people that they're coming out of the recession, but yet there's numbers and everything that shows that they're not. We're going to talk a little bit. I would like to get into a little bit of Europe and their election policies and how those peoples are, how the people of Europe are turning more to the right. And also China came out with some interesting changes for a country that is a communist country, how they're changing to become more like the West. So how are the changes?
They're changing
going
to become more like the West, yeah. And we're changing to become more like a police state.
But it's going
to
be
a communist police state. But we're also changing because it's time for us to say bye-bye. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back next Monday. Hope you tune in then. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money.